What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles, made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show.
Now to introduce our awesome guest today. I'm very excited to get to know her, the great and powerful Ashley Mayland.
Great and powerful. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, we're excited to get to know you here. So, yeah. Ashley, for the people out there that don't know you, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm a single mom. I started becoming an influencer a couple years back, just sharing my journey through healing after divorce and domestic violence. My marriage was not the domestic violence situation. Just want to clear that up so there's no confusion there. But when I was young, that I was in an abusive relationship. And then in my early 20s, I was the victim of sexual assault. And those things I kind of carried with me for a long time and didn't know how to heal. After my divorce, I began that journey of healing and took a look at myself, and I started sharing about it online, and it just kind of blew up, and it made me realize that in being vulnerable enough and sharing my struggles, it made other people feel less alone, and it made me feel less alone. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, who I am, I guess. Yeah. But
so how long ago was that you kind of started sharing your story?
About 2.5 years ago. Yeah.
Wow. It's really blown up for you too.
Yeah. Which is amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate to that. And I'm sure, you know, just the message that you're putting out and having that basically safe space for people to talk to and reach out to and have that community has probably been extremely helpful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in ways I never imagined. Like, I still every day I'm like, I can't believe I'm the person that's like facilitating this kind of a space. I never thought I would be. But I get messages every single day, like, of people that are super, like, just in the depths of their pain and struggling. And it's encouraging them, which encourages me and, you know, pushes me forward to keep going, even on the days when I'm like, this sucks. Cause sometimes it can be really dark too. Opening up about your life personally, you know?
Yeah. To the whole world.
Yeah.
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 Well, and if you're comfortable with it, I mean, can we ask you a little bit about your, you know, the domestic violence mm-hmm. and sexual and all the stuff you've been through?
Yeah. I'm very comfortable with it now. And it's been in a long time. I'm 38 years old. It happened when I was 19. When I was about 15 to 19 years old, I was in a relationship with a guy that was about 6 years older than me. And, you know, it was my first relationship, like, you know, the first thing I'd ever experienced. So I didn't know what it was supposed to look like. I just felt really good that an older guy liked me and thought I was great, you know. But long story short, it was one of those situations where I dove in because I'm a lover and I'm, you know, that's just who I am at my nature. And I... progressively got worse and worse, but I didn't know the signs. Like, I was too young and naive. I had no idea what an abusive relationship was like. And so there were so many things that were abusive in the process of it, mentally and emotionally, that I passed up and just kind of sucked it up through because I really loved this guy. It was like my first everything. And it wasn't until later in the relationship that, well, one, I lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot of my family even got to a point where they were just like, we don't know what to do. You won't leave this person. You won't get out of this relationship. And you're hiding it now from us. You're lying. You're sneaking off to see this person that we all know is horrible to you. And so a lot of people can't understand that. And I get it now, but, it got to the point where it got very physically abusive too. And there were several things that happened, you know, that led up to the final point where I knew I had to leave. I had to leave. I fled the entire state, actually. You know, long story short, we were broken up. We were at this fair and he had cheated on me. And so I was there with other friends and there was an altercation between
like
the two of us.
You just found out he cheated on you like at the fair or?
No, like I had already found out we broke up.
Oh, okay.
And then, well, I didn't find out that he cheated on me. I walked in on him cheating on me, actually.
Oh, wow. No, even worse.
No.
Which was not fun. Yeah, we had been broken up for a while, and he finally convinced me to take him back, which, again, I was just, like, so young and stupid, and I did. And then I thought, okay, he's changed this time. He really has. And this is what abuse victims always do. They're like, he's going to change. He wants to change because when you're empathetic and you see someone in pain, you think that means that it really matters to them, you know, that they really care, that they're really sorry. And it doesn't always. But I'd taken him back, gone home that weekend because I was living out of the same town. And we were supposed to get together, couldn't get a hold of him. And then finally later that night, someone, I don't even remember who it was. I think it was my best friend called me because her boyfriend was friends with him and they were out drinking and partying and they saw him leave with a girl from the bar. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me, you know, like, you've got to be kidding me. And so I went to his house and he answered the door and he was in his boxers. And I knew because I heard the girl's voice when I was knocking on the door. And then I heard like scurrying, mm-hmm. you know, and anyway, I got inside and I was like, I know there's someone here. Like, I'm not stupid. And I was looking around, couldn't find her. I looked under their bed and there's a bra and underwear under there. And at that point, I'm like, just tell me where this person is. Like, I was in a rage,
yeah.
like you wouldn't believe. And anyway, long story short, I ended up finding her. She was in the attic hiding.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Naked, completely naked. And she was a girl I worked with. And
oh, even worse.
But she didn't know. It wasn't her fault. Oh, like, okay. I know this is so shocking. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Soap opera. But she left. Anyway, so the week following, that had happened. And he had come up to me at this fair and he called me some names. I threw my drink in his face and was going to leave. And he followed me, grabbed me by my hair, dragged me down the sidewalk in front of hundreds of people. And
no one did anything?
Yeah, they did, actually. Thank God. Good. Yeah. There was a group of guys there. I'll get to that in a minute, but there was a group of guys there a few years older than me in high school. And they saw him and they came running after him, pulled him off of me, and I took off running. And the fair had closed down, so it was really dark. And all the rides were just like, it was like out of a scary movie. And I remember running down like the middle of this main street with all like, it was dark and there's all these rides just like, it's such a weird,
creepy
thing. Yeah. And I remembered hearing footsteps behind me and I knew it was him. And I grabbed my phone and I started to call my friend who lived really close by and I was going to run to her house. And I saw his hand come around from behind me, grab my phone and throw it. And then he grabbed me by my arm, dragged me into this alley. And he pushed me up against the wall and was strangling me and telling me he was going to kill me. And I believe him, you know, I believed him. And by the grace of God, that same group of guys had the wisdom to like keep following him. And I remember being there. I obviously his hands around my throat and thinking this is it. And I remember them, all the guys, I hear like yelling and I see them come around the corner of my eye and then they pull him off of me. And I took off running again. And I remember I stopped right before crossing a road to where my friend's house was at. And I remember looking back, and for a moment I thought I should go back and help him because I saw these guys kicking him. I mean, I could see blood on his face. Like, I knew they were, like, you know,
giving him what he deserved, to be completely honest.
Yeah. But there was a part of me that almost felt bad. And then I thought, no, I can't do that. And so I just continued on. And, you know, anyway, long story short, it was after that I was like, I have to get out of here because if he doesn't kill me, I'll end up wanting to kill myself. And I don't know that I have the strength right now in my life to not do that. So I left. I moved about 3.5 hours away.
And where was this? Where were you?
I was in Illinois at that time. And I moved to Missouri and ended up moving in with my mom who lived there. But it took me a long, long time to like recover from that. And I never went and got therapy or really talked about it, except to like super close friends. And I carried that with me for a long time. And I was too young to understand that like what you don't process stays in your body, right? I didn't know that. I didn't know it would affect the decisions that I made in like choosing a partner or choosing who to date or how it would affect the way that I felt about myself and whether I was worthy or not. And so then when I was in my early 20s and I ended up in a situation where I was assaulted, that was just another layer, right? On top of that. And then again, didn't know what to do with that. I just tucked it away, didn't tell anybody about it for a really long time. I felt gross about it. I felt ashamed of it. And yeah, I let that carry over until I got married. And then getting married was really difficult because I was carrying all this stuff that was affecting the way I felt about myself, the way I showed up in the world, the way I showed up in relationships, the unworthiness that I felt. And it just made it really difficult. Not to say that my ex-husband was perfect. He wasn't. But I do think a lot of the problems that we had stemmed from the unworthiness that I felt. And so when my marriage ended and I started dating toxic men again, I thought the number of people out there that aren't healed isn't going to change, but I can change me. I can get to a place in my life where I no longer accept what I know I don't deserve. Like, I deserve to be treated well. I deserve to be loved. I deserve to be cared for and thought of and considered. And that won't change until I change the way that I accept people into my life, things that I accept for myself. And so that was kind of where my healing journey began. And I started with therapy, and that changed a lot for me. And then I started sharing it and sharing like what I was experiencing kind of vaguely, but with a spin of encouragement, because that helped me. And it just started helping so many people that I thought, I have to keep going. And then even when people would write horrific things or awful comments or leave me weird messages that were like just hateful and mean, I thought, well, it's not for them, you know, it's for myself and it's for the people that need it. So I'm going to keep going. And that's what I've just kind of done for the last 2.5 years. So.
Wow. So like through the domestic violence and the sexual assault, I mean, how have those experiences shaped the way that you see the world today?
For a long time, I was very jaded. A long time, very distrusting of people, men in particular, as I'm sure you can imagine. But I've realized that it's not about, and here's what happens. And I think this is important to talk about. What happens in the domestic violence world, and I know a lot about this since I'm in it, is that women, because men are so much more often the perpetrators of domestic violence, it can happen both ways. But it's mostly male dominated in that area, which makes sense, you know. But because of that, what happens a lot is the argument becomes men are bad and women don't need men and women shouldn't trust men. And so for a while, I kind of felt that way because every story I heard, everything I saw, all the research I was doing was showing me that men hurt women and hate women, right? But through healing, I've realized that If we're really honest with ourselves, it's not about men being bad, women being good, or women being bad and men being good. It's a personal basis of who we are. It's a personal thing. There are good men, there are bad men, there are good women, there are bad women. And by bad, I don't even mean that. I just mean unhealed, really. And if we don't bridge the gap between each other, it will always just be, well, all men are bad. All women are bad, you know, and then nothing ever changes. And so I've tried to make it a point, like on my platform, to speak to everyone and not just women, even though women are the ones that are victims most of the time, because women, that this issue doesn't go away until we all heal together. And if we villainize one another, we'll never come together on anything, you know?
Yeah, I think the I think overgeneralizing any group of anything, like, I mean, there's bad, you know, quote unquote, bad versions of everybody. I mean, there's bad police officers, there's bad teachers, there's bad everything. Like, you can't just automatically just assume like all men are bad or all women are bad, or, you know, we can't just overgeneralize and just, you know, put everybody in one specific box. Everybody's got different experiences and different, you know, I mean, everybody's got different lives. You know, trauma has a way of shaping the world. How did your past experiences like affect your marriage, mental health, even your sense of self? How do you think?
Well, first of all, as I said, I didn't know how to sit with it. I didn't know how to process trauma. I didn't even know that you needed to. I just kind of thought, like, your past is your past. You move forward, you let it go. And there's, you know, there's different, you know, takes on that of whether you should go back and sit with things or whether you should just, like, look to the future. And I think it's a combination of both. For me, my entire self-concept was based around the fact that I had been abused and rejected in my life a lot. And so I didn't believe I was worthy of a healthy relationship. I didn't believe that people would ever really like me or love me, you know? And so every relationship I had, even friendships, was kind of based on the idea of waiting for someone to drop the ball, like waiting for someone to hurt me, waiting for someone to reject me. And I still, to this day, struggle with it. Like, I still have to, like, snap out of it sometimes and be like, hey, like, you're a good person. You're doing a good job. You're doing your best. You're showing up as well as you possibly can, and people do like you. Like, it sounds so silly, but I still have to remind myself of that sometimes. And but yeah, I think my self-worth most of my life was really poor because I didn't sit with the trauma and I didn't accept it and I didn't see the bigger picture that the things that people do to you aren't your fault. Like, bad things happen to good people all the time, and it's not because you deserved it. It's not because something's wrong with you. It's just life. And if you can find the lesson in the pain and you can turn the perspective around and go, okay, like, this really, really hurt, but I actually survived it. And then you can use that pain to help other people. And I think that's the whole purpose of it. So I struggled with severe depression for a really long time and a severe, you know, self-worth, like, just damaging self-worth and crippling self-worth and all of that because of those reasons. But I'm finally, like, at a place in my life where I really believe in myself. But I had to change me. I had to sit with the dark stuff and get really honest about how I felt about myself. And 2.5 years ago, it wasn't very, very good. I didn't like myself at all. I thought, there's no point in me being here. Like, I'm not helping anyone. I'm not doing anything. No one ever wants to be with me. No one likes me. And which is ridiculous because none of that was true. That's just how I felt about myself. But sitting in that, as dark as it was and as hard as it was, it changed me, because when you can accept where you are, you can change where you're going, you know? So.
And what was it like, the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, like, that kind of started you on this whole healing journey?
Definitely my divorce. And then just seeing the cycle of the toxic relationships that I kept ending. Because it's like, when you've done something so many times, you go, okay, is it them or is it me? And I wanted to do that. I wanted to be like, okay, it's my fault. It's their fault. And then I was like, no, it's their fault and it's my fault. But I'm the only one I can change. I can't change other people. I can't change me. I can change my life. I can make a difference in my own life. And I can become an example for my daughter instead of, you know, someone that she grows up and resents for making bad choices in my life and choosing bad partners, you know?
Yeah, I think that was, for me, when I was going through it, like, the very first question when I sat down with an attorney, they were like, tell me what happened. So told them everything that happened with the divorce and, or why we were getting divorced. And basically he said, you know, what did you do as a man to cause her to do what she did? And I was like, haven't really thought about that. That's a great question. And so it caused me to sit back and reflect. I mean, it wasn't even a therapist. It was a divorce attorney that asked me this question. And so it caused me to sit back and think like, all right, where did I fuck up? What was I doing wrong? And I mean, my entire, you know, I was already in therapy at that point, but I had to sit back and realize like, okay, it wasn't all her and the actions that she put, you know, that there was, I mean, I fucked up. Like mm-hmm. And it took me a while. And honestly, that's what helped me move past everything and get through this divorce and everything, and us having an even better relationship now than we did when we were married.
Wow.
And so, yeah, no, that was the biggest thing for me was sitting in that therapy and having someone ask that question, like you said, realizing where you're at fault in this, mm-hmm. and then, you know, forgiving yourself in that moment. Mm-hmm. Once you can forgive yourself, then you're allowed to forgive. And then you can start forgiving others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that was like the biggest thing that I took from it. And what's really helped me, I mean, like you said, 2.5 years, I am a completely different person now than I was 2.5 years ago. And honestly, like I look back, I'm like, how did people stand being around me? Like I was an asshole. Like I really like what was I thinking?
Yeah.
But no, it took that, and it was a blessing in disguise. And but yeah, I mean, where would you say in your journey, like if you were to grade yourself, you know, I'm A, B, C, or D, or F. Like I'm always trying to improve. I put myself in a B range with where I'm at right now. If you were to grade yourself, where do you feel you sit right now in your journey of healing and getting through all this?
I mean, honestly, I'm definitely an A. Okay. Maybe not an A plus yet,
gotcha.
But awesome. I'm in such a good place. Like don't get me wrong. I still have triggers. Like I even just last week was like a whole week of triggers where I was just like, what in the hell is going on, man? Like I thought I was beyond this. I thought I was past this, but it's like, it's the awareness. And I'm sure you can understand this and relate to this. Both of you can. It's being more aware of the things that you didn't even know were a problem before. Right. Mm-hmm. Like all last week I was just being triggered by other people. But I was constantly realizing it like, oh, this is me. This is me. This isn't them. This isn't them. This is my work. This is something I have to sit with and figure out. And it sucks when you think you've already moved through like a certain stage of your healing and you realize, oh, no, I didn't. I was just ignoring that part of my life. I wasn't healed from it. It just wasn't coming up. And the best feeling in the world is getting to a place that no matter what is going on around you, no matter how many things are triggering you, you still come back to your sense of peace. And that's where I'm at. Like, I feel very peaceful in my life. I feel very peaceful with who I am. I feel very peaceful about where I'm going and the things that I'm doing and putting out into the world. Like, I can constantly come back to the centered energy that I have right now that feels really good. No matter how many things like knock me out of it for a minute, I still keep coming back. Whereas before it was like, if you knocked me out of this space, I was out of it for a month and a half. Right. And I didn't even know I was the problem. Yeah. Whereas now it's like, I get knocked out for a few hours and then I'm like, okay, let's get back to square one. Like we're good. We're good. I've got me. Like, I feel like God's got me and I'm good. Like, and it's just amazing. It's so amazing.
That's awesome. Good for you.
Thank you.
Now, if there's people out there struggling like with trauma going on currently or past trauma, what would you say should be like the first step?
Acceptance. You can't change anything if you don't know what it looks like. Like if you can't accept that, like especially with trauma, if you can't see that it's there, nothing is going to change. Like you can't heal from something you're not willing to sit with or accept that it is there. So like just acceptance of like, I'm not where I want to be. I'm not who I want to be. I don't feel as good as I know I can physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and going, I need help. Like need help. And taking that first step to like seek out help in whatever capacity. I think therapy is great. Support system is actually even better, believe it or not. They say that your support system is more powerful than even going to therapy. But yeah, if that's the first step, just take it.
Well, and speaking of therapy, I mean, Zach and I talk about this with our show. Do you feel like your podcast is a form of therapy for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think giving back in any way at all is therapy, right? Like just knowing that like you haven't just caved and like given up and just accepted that the world sucks. Like it just feels good to want to help people, you know?
So going back, when did you first start feeling like you've kind of made your way through this and that you've gotten to that A grade?
Honestly, just probably in the past like 6 months.
Okay.
And even then it's been a little bit rocky, but I've always, for the last like year, I felt like I was really close. But yeah, I would say in the last like 3 to 6 months is just like, it just like hit me really hard. Like, oh my God, I feel like I've finally gotten to the other end of that tunnel. Like, and I may not be in the light, but it's really bright where I'm at right now, you know?
And can you put like a, like one specific thing that kind of made you feel that way?
Well, and I mean, I know everyone's not spiritual, but this is just my experience. It was about 3 or 4 months ago. No, it's maybe like 4 or 5 months ago. I don't know exactly. My ADHD makes it hard to keep track of time. But I remembered I've always been spiritual, but I'd never really prayed about my situation. Like I never really prayed about my mental health or my just the way that I felt about life. And I remember one night just crying, and I prayed and I was like, I need peace. Like I need peace and I don't know how to get it. And I want joy and I want to feel good. And I woke up the next day. And from that point on, it was just like, I was okay. I don't even know how to explain it. It was kind of a miracle in a way. And, you know, I know not everyone believes in those things and that's okay, but that's just what might happen for me. I don't know, from that point on, I was like, I never thought about praying about it. I never thought about asking for help and guidance in the way that I felt in my happiness and all of those things. I think I probably considered that silly or shallow to ask about, you know, or pray about, but it really did make an impact for me. And maybe it's mind shift that or mindset shift. I don't know, but I just, yeah, from that point on, it seems like I've just been okay and getting better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sure. Now, it seems like many people, and, you know, including yourself, it sounds like have repeated, you know, toxic relationship patterns.
Mm-hmm.
How did you like break free from that?
Knowing that I was at least half the problem, knowing that. So I just, I dated a few different people that were just, it was just an awful dynamic, it was me like chasing, begging, pleading, trying to fill some sort of void that no one else can fill. And they were unhealed and uncertain and inconsistent and all the red flags that you would typically see if you knew they were there. And I was just like overlooking it, over compassion and over empathizing. And one day when I was just like, it was like the last relationship that I had been in, and I was just in such a dark place with it, and it had ended, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm the problem. Like, I mean, yes, they were toxic. Yes, they weren't healthy. Yes, all of those things are true, but I didn't have to stay. I didn't have to accept that. And I was kind of just sick of my own shit, you know? Like, I was just like, suck it up and get it together. Like, you're either going to be in, you either want healthy relationships or you don't. But if you want healthy relationships, you have to quit tolerating unhealthy relationships. You have to quit letting people in your life that are proving to you over and over and over again that they don't really give a shit about you, you know? And I think in that, I just got sick of my own suffering. I just got sick of suffering all the time and knowing that I could actually change it. I could pave a different path for myself if I wanted to, you know? And so I just was like, no more. Like, I have to heal. I have to heal. I have to get away from this circus that I've created for myself. And I have to choose what path I want to take and choose the kind of people I want in my life and friends too. And I have to stop keeping an opening space up to people who aren't where I am in my life. That was hard for me because I love people and I love being a light in people's life in some weird, selfish way, I guess. But you just can't. Like if you want to truly make a difference, you have to be so particular with who you let in your space because it affects you whether you want it to or not. And so, yeah.
Well, that brings up a good point. You know, talking about relationships, you know, what are some of the biggest misconceptions men have about what women actually want in a relationship or in a partner?
You know, I can't speak for men, obviously, because I'm not one.
Right.
But I will say this. I know that the number one, the most important thing for a woman is safety. and not just physical. Like, obviously you want to know that the person you're with is capable of protecting you physically. That, I think that's really important too, whether we realize it or not. But emotional, mental safety, knowing that that person, but women are more emotional. Women are more nurturing and empathetic. That's just who they are by nature for the most part. And if you aren't with someone who is pretty stable, mentally and emotionally, that can't hold space for your emotions and the wave of things that you feel, you don't feel safe with them. Like if I, for example, like I know a lot of men are kind of just like, ooh, when it comes to a women's emotions, right? They're just like, ooh, I don't like this. This feels weird.
Yeah, I think, I mean, men just have a hard time expressing their emotions.
Well, just yeah. Because we're taught from a young age that we're not supposed to have emotions. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
It is 100% huge problem, especially for mental health with men, I've noticed too.
Absolutely.
But women, if you are like, if there's a wall up every time she's crying, if there's a wall up every time she's like, man, I'm just struggling right now and I don't know what to do. And you're just kind of like, I don't know what to do with that either. She doesn't feel safe. She can't fully submit to a relationship with a man until she's like, he's got me in every sense of the way. Like when you can say, maybe you don't need a solution right now, but I hear you. I get it. Like just creating that safe space for a woman to be a woman, I think is really important. And I don't know if that's talked about enough, you know?
And do you think it's just as simple as just listening, just sitting there and giving them a sounding board to just talk to? Because men, we want to fix things. We want to find a solution for things. That's where our mind and head goes. But I know that's one of the biggest things that I've learned is just listening.
Mm-hmm.
and not trying, don't even have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit there and let them talk. Is that,
man, that sucks. You know, I'll say shit like that all the time. You know, I've realized instead of like, I've noticed with my wife specifically, like, you know, the second I try to start coming up with solutions for the problem, it like doesn't seem to help at all. But if I just sit there and listen and man, that sucks.
Yeah.
Oh God, I would hate that. You know, and you just kind of like agree with her and you think about, you know, you try to kind of put yourself in and see how you would feel in that situation instead of like trying to be the problem solver. That seems to be, at least I get better reactions from her that way.
Yes. So, women don't want solutions. They want affirmation and encouragement. You know, they want you to be like, yeah, I would feel the same way. But you're doing great.
She really is a bitch.
Yeah, she is. She is. And you know, you're amazing though. So don't let her talk to you like that. Yeah. You know, you do that and a woman's going to be in love with you for the rest of her life. You know, like that's what they need. And I think that's great. And I think that it helps too when men can allow themselves to open up a little bit too, though. Like you connect more and that makes a woman feel safe. If she can give you her stuff and you can give her yours and trust her with yours, that creates such a beautiful environment of safety, I think, in a relationship.
So guys, hear that? It's that simple. Listen and be vulnerable.
And it's hard. I know it's so hard to open up. Even good men struggle with that. Not about like, you know, you don't have to be toxic to be like, I'm never giving you any of my problems. But even good men, you know, struggle to open up and be vulnerable because they think that somehow that makes them weak or like less of a leader or, you know, less of the lead of the house. But that's not true at all. Yeah. Like,
I mean, things that I've discovered about myself through therapy, it wasn't so much that I felt weak. It was just not wanting to feel like a burden.
Mm,
you know, mm-hmm. I think that's more of it. Like, hey, my problems are my problems and I don't want to push those off onto you and burden you with those problems. I can shoulder this and I can solve this on my own. So I don't want to take my problems to you. You have enough going on in your life and things that you're dealing with that it does. It makes it hard because, I mean, like you said, women tend to be more emotional than men. And more times than not, women are wanting to come to their partner with their problems that it's just like, well, now I feel like an asshole for trying to bring up my problem. I'm not, you know what? You've got enough on your plate. I'm not going to put that burden on you. And so that's where I failed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's things that I'm still learning through with dating and things like that. Like, yeah, they may be going through their own things, but it's okay to share like at times where, even so, like there's times where I still keep things to myself and I'll save it for another day
mm-hmm.
when I know that they're going through something. But that's been that I feel, and a lot of guys that I've talked to have felt the same way. That's like, I just don't want to be a burden.
I know. So, I've actually got a guy friend this week, just the last 2 weeks, he's been kind of going through it. And I've been like, hey, like, I'm here. Like, I'll support you. I want to encourage you. And here's what happens when you don't open that space for them, which you don't have to. If that's like something you just can't do, that's okay. Like, no one should be forcing you to give you their problems. But I feel like in that person's life, I kind of feel like I've been blocked out. Like, I feel like I want to help you. I wouldn't offer it if I couldn't. If I didn't have the space for it, I wouldn't. But a woman feels like you don't want to be close to her when you don't allow her to be there for you too, you know? Yep. And then that can kind of push her away a little bit, whether it's in friendship right. or otherwise, right. you know, because that's what connects us is the things that we're struggling with, you know?
And I thought, yeah, I mean, do you follow Chris Williamson's podcast?
I do, Modern actually, Wisdom? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he just had a guy on that runs this ranch, and I mean, he, unbelievable quote that he put out there about man, about men and manhood, about how, I mean, men have 100 different problems going on at any given time, but they're not willing to open up and share that with you because, again, the burden and things like that. But it was really powerful. It was really like getting into the mindset of a man and understanding like, hey, yeah, there's a lot going on in our lives. It's just, again, not wanting to put that burden on you and that we can handle it, because there are times like, hey, we do it, and you get that whole, even from partners, and I've had it, and it's like, oh, suck it up, buttercup. Like, well, no, that's just something that's bothering me. And you're going to shut down that emotion and that feeling that I have, that it makes me not want to share anymore. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of that.
Yeah, that's not you, though.
No, right. That's your part, the partner.
That's the immaturity of them, or the unhealed part of them right. that can't hold space for that, which is also like something to consider.
Right. Oh, it's a big red flag.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, that's been one of my, like, with dating, that's been one of the things, is like, I'm trying to be more vulnerable in those moments. But at the same time, it's like, let's ease into that and kind of see where they're at. Mm-hmm. So to hold the space, see if they can hold that space for me. But yeah.
Same. Yeah, I hear that.
It's tough. There's a lot of give and take.
Healing and healthy people though can, and I don't think you should just break up with anybody because they're not really good at that. I mean, that's, but are they aware of it? Is right. it something they're working on? Because that's really what matters.
Exactly.
Well, like going back to your first, you know, kind of serious relationship, it was clearly pretty toxic. You know, what if you could go back and give you 15 when you started dating this guy? If you could go back to and talk to your 15-year-old self, what advice would you give her?
Ooh, that's tough. I would tell her that just because something looks really great doesn't mean it is, and to trust herself and to know her worth and to not settle for anything that doesn't make her feel like the best version of herself. For sure.
So you have a daughter?
I do. Yeah. She's 10.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You guys have kids? Yes. I know you do. Yes. Yeah.
I have two.
Both have boys.
Yeah, we both have.
Two boys
each.
Oh, nice.
yeah. So you have a daughter. What's, how do you expect to raise her and, you know, kind of show her, you know, kind of what love is?
So I'm not a perfect parent. I don't think any of us are, but for me, I've actually learned, this is what I've learned through parenting. Well, one, it makes you so patient because you have no other choice.
yeah.
But I think example is, she doesn't listen to what I say, but she watches what I do. That's for sure. And sometimes I doubt myself as a parent and I think I'm not doing a great job, but then I like will see a teacher that she has and she's the most empathetic, kind little girl in our class. And then I'm going, okay, I am doing something right. Yeah. Like, and it reminds me too, that like who you are has a bigger impact on them than what you tell them or who you think they should be. I love my dad very much, and my mom, but they both had like very specific ideas of who they thought I should be growing up. And so it's been really hard for them, not anymore, but for a long time, it was very hard for them to just kind of let me pave my own path.
What did they expect of you?
Well, my dad really wanted me to be into sports and things like that growing up, which I sucked at. I tried out for everything because that's what he wanted me to do. It didn't make anything except for track, because there are no their tryouts for track. You're just in.
Everybody makes it.
You're just in. And the coach wasn't happy that I was in, I'll tell you that. But I was a singer. I was very creative, artsy. And that was kind of what I wanted to be. But my dad struggled. He was like, no, you need to be in volleyball. You need to try out for the cheerleading team. You need to do all these things, which I'm sure his intentions were good, just to kind of keep me involved in something. But And my mom wanted me to be a worship leader, you know, for my entire life because she was one and then she didn't fulfill that all the way. So there was this part of her that needed me to do it to kind of pass the torch. And I did it. I did do it, but it didn't fulfill me. Anyway, long story short, getting back to the point is like, I think that just being fully who you are has a really a great impact on your kids because then it gives them the space to figure out who they are, but also see the things in you that they admire and take that instead of you just telling them exactly, you know, who they have to be or what they have to do and all of that.
Now, do you think your views on what are like where your parents were wanting you to be had some sort of effect into the choosing of the toxic trait and like things and like that moving forward into relationships, like, hey, and or not seeing yourself as worthy because you've got your parents that are putting these pressures on you to be certain people and you're not. And because I mean,
yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I never really thought about, but you're absolutely right because I never felt like who I was good enough. You know, like it was always like, I have to be something different than what I am because who I am doesn't seem to be accepted very well. And yeah, for sure.
I mean, I know I go through it with stuff with my parents and the way I was raised. So that was that's actually like one of the biggest topics of therapy for me is the parent side of things and like
really
certain things that they said or did or didn't do that kind of and how they raised me kind of led into who I am and my thinking on things and where I'm at and, you know, breaking through those with. And I mean, it took a long time. And now, I mean, I notice these things now with my parents. I notice when they're doing certain things that are triggers and it's honestly, it's really, that's been one of the other bigger things that has kind of helped me through is like, yeah, first and foremost, admitting where I fucked up, but then looking back in my past and learning why I fucked up mm-hmm. because that's where it stemmed from was just relationships with my parents and how that all shaped me into who I am. And that was a big turning point for me.
Wow. Yeah. Do you feel like you're finally becoming that person now, the person that you really feel is true to who you are?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we always want, like, I was just on a podcast last week and we were talking about fatherhood and all that and, you know, or just in parenthood in general, we want our kids to be better than us. Mm-hmm. Like, that's ultimately what we want. And, you know, I'm not going to dive too deep into it because I'll start crying when I talk about my kids. I always start crying.
That's Zach. Yeah, Pat cries a lot.
This is a safe space.
I'm a crier. So if you want to see me, just go watch that podcast from last week. You'll see me tear up.
I love a good cry. So
yeah, no, it's but no, I like I said, it's I want and ultimately it's just learning. You know, my dad didn't have a dad growing up, so it's like, hey, he doesn't have a father figure to know how to be a father. You know. My like learning about my mom's past and just accepting like, hey, you know what? They loved me the best way that they knew how based off their experiences. Mm-hmm. And so for me being a dad, like I'm going to love my kids the best way that I know how to love them and give them that opportunity, but I want them to be better than what I was. And it's nice being able to look back and be like, all right, I'm not going to do this like my parents did. And I'm going to do my own thing. Mm. And that's been a big thing for, especially with when it comes to parenting.
You know what they call that, right?
What?
It means you're the chain breaker in your family.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're doing something different than what everyone else did.
Yeah.
That's really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is that so is that kind of where what you're thinking too in terms of how you're raising your daughter? Are you wanting to be that chain breaker? You're not going to put those pressures in sports or being in church and being a worship leader. You're going to let her do her thing.
Oh, 100%. I want to be a chain breaker in every area of my life because, you know, we all come from trauma. It's just life, right? But I've seen the patterns that like even the patterns I'm breaking in relationships, I've seen it in all the women in my family. On both sides. I've seen it in the men, you know, wildly enough, you know, there were a lot of abusers on my dad's side of the family. You know, they were not necessarily great men, all of them. And so I want to break all of those chains for my daughter and the children that she has and, you know, on and on. I don't want those issues to exist anymore. I don't want women in my family that get into abusive relationships or think they're okay or don't think they have worth. I don't want that ever again for anyone, you know?
Well, if you had to create a red flag list for like young women out there, like looking to get into a relationship with a good guy or like, well, or I shouldn't say a good, if you're creating a red flag list for young women
out
there.
Red flag, green flag.
Yeah. Like, what would be some red flags that you'd say, like, run, ladies?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, if you're not healing, don't date, first of all. If you're not actively working on yourself, don't date, because you're not ready. It's not a good time to do it. But if you are, and you truly don't want to end up in another bad relationship or toxic relationship, the number one thing that I wish I had learned to do was trust my intuition. And it's hard to do, but if something feels wrong, if something feels off, it's because it is. And we have to learn to just trust that instead of like having to have evidence, you know? But yeah, I would say number one is trusting your instincts. If somebody feels off, they probably are, right?
Gut feeling is like a real thing. I mean, they say your stomach is like your second brain, or mm-hmm. you know, it's directly connected to your brain. So mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of it's something you should definitely listen to.
But when you're not healing, you question yourself.
Sure.
You know, when you're not in a place of awareness, you're going, is it me? Am I just seeing things? No, it's not you. It's not you. But either way, when you are in a relationship with a healthy person, those kinds of things those alarm bells shouldn't be going off. Like, no alarm bell should be going off. It should be like, this is enjoyable, getting to know this person, and I'm still figuring them out. But it feels good. Like, it feels peaceful, it feels safe, you know, it should feel safe. So I would say that's the number one thing. Also, just inconsistency with the person. I don't mean like they're calling you every single day, giving you a good morning, good night text every single day. That's not what I mean by consistency. I mean their personality. Like, they're the same person every time you see them. They're the same person every time you speak to them, for the most part. And I mean, we all have struggles. We all have things come up, but they can communicate, like, if they're having an off day, like I'm having an off day, you know, that's consistency, right? But when someone's like really, really nice one day, and the next day they're kind of weird and off, like standoffish, or then another day they kind of snap at you for no reason, that's inconsistent behavior in a person's personality. That's a huge red flag that women miss a lot, because we're overly empathetic. And I think guys do too. But and then the patterns of their relationships, is everyone in their life out to get them? That's a red flag. Do they have broken relationships in their life? That's a red flag. Do they have a lot of exes that they think are crazy? That's a red flag. You know, like, normal, healthy people aren't calling all of their ex-boyfriends or ex-girlfriends crazy. Right. They're going, yeah, I mean, things didn't work out because of this and that person just wasn't in the same place. You know, they're reasonable, right? But yeah, I would say those are like the three number one things, like trusting your instincts, looking for inconsistent behaviors in their personality, and the way that they talk about the people in their lives and the relationships that they have in their lives. You know, I think that will tell you a lot about someone and whether you want to be in relationship with them, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously your daughter's not quite old enough to date yet, but,
thank God.
You know, what are some of those conversations, or are you already having these conversations with her to prepare her for the dating world and things to look out for? Are you already having those conversations with her?
Not yet, because she still thinks guys are gross.
Okay.
Thank God.
Perfect. Good. Yeah, we are
gross.
Yeah, that's true. That doesn't, yeah, she's not wrong. Guys are gross.
Still think boys are weird.
Yeah.
But no, I wish I could go back to my younger self in so many ways. But one of my biggest issues that I've always had with myself, and that I'm going to be very like clear for her, is like, words don't mean anything if they're not backed up by action. Like, if words and actions aren't aligning, throw the whole thing out, because that is integrity, right? Like, and integrity matters. But that, and just like not trusting a person just because they're nice. Like, there's a huge difference between a nice and a kind person. And I didn't know that when I was younger. If somebody was nice to me, I just thought they were a good person. But that's not true.
We just had that conversation with a member up here last week on Friday. I think we were having that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice means nothing. Right. Anyone can be nice on the surface, right? But kindness, you just feel it. You know it. But you can't trust that until time has proven that it's true. You know, if I could go back, my gosh, I would have not dated so many people that I did when I was young, just because of that reason alone, you know?
Let's go. I'd like to get into some of the kind of the business stuff.
Okay.
So you founded Ashley Taylor & Co?
The Ashley Taylor Co. Ashley. Yeah.
So yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, it's really kind of just like the main, it's what my LLC is under, but it's really This Is Where We Heal, which is okay. Now also my podcast. But I'm just beginning that. I'm just kind of in the beginning stages of building that and, doing something with that. And I don't really know what that looks like. That's why I have a business coach.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's a
welcome
great
to entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know idea what I'm going. Doing. Yeah. I'm the talent, I guess you could say, but, yeah, no, I have a coach, Jamie, Thurber, actually, she's my business coach because she knows how to do all those things. So I've just kind of been like, here's what I have. Show me what to do.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have Jamie on the show here soon too.
So. I know. Yeah. She's the only reason anything's working. Because I have no idea about business, unfortunately. So
if you had like a vision for what you would like it to be, what do you have kind of an idea of, you know, what you hope or what you hope it becomes?
Yeah. I want it to become, I want to create like just a huge community of healing just in general. But I want that to turn into conferences and, you know, communities and things like that to help men and women just heal. I don't know. I'm still very broad. Like I have like specific things in my mind, but like I just want it to become a movement of some kind. And I don't know how that like relates business wise. I'm sure I'll figure it out, but eventually I'll put my books out there. I write all the time, but for some reason I just can't seem to finish anything with my ADHD. So that'll work on eventually. But right now I'm trying to build the podcast portion of that and make that a business. And then everything else, I'm just kind of gradually going to add, you know, on to that bracket of things, if that makes sense. So.
Well, with the influencer side of things and the social media aspect, it all comes down to like advertising dollars and stuff like that. Do you have some advertisers that you're already working with or people like, are there any collaborations that you would love to work with?
So I don't actually. And I know it's nuts. Everyone's always like, why aren't you selling things? Why aren't you promoting things? Why aren't you doing collabs and stuff? I'm really, and this may be foolish of me. Again, that's why I have a business coach, because I'm figuring all this out, learning. But I'm very particular. I don't ever want what I'm doing, unless it makes perfect sense to what I'm doing, I don't want it to be about selling something. And so I've kind of held off on that portion of my social media, and I've never used it for that, because right now the focus is still just like the inner work that I'm doing and that I want to help other people do. And then eventually, as my business grows through the podcast and other outlets, I'll start incorporating, you know, collaborations and things with companies that make sense for what I'm doing, like betterhelp.com and like Plush Care, which is like an online, you know, doctor service that you can get counseling and all these things. Yeah. So
did you hear that, BetterHelp and Plush Care?
I actually use Plush Care. I love them. And I used to use Better Health. I love them. Or Better Help, not health. But yeah, so eventually I will do that. But right now I'm still building the foundation of everything. And it's more important to me to do that than to make money from it right at this moment, if that makes sense.
Well, the money will come.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a true believer in that. If you just, you know, if you just keep doing the right thing and you keep showing up and you keep doing the right, you know, keep doing it and just do the thing.
Yeah.
Eventually something's going to blossom from it.
Talk about consistency and emotions and people showing up. Same thing with business.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's really it. It's patience. It's knowing I'm worthy of that, but accepting that right now the building of it is more important. Yeah. You know?
I just think just like you said with the relationships, I think consistency, like one of the most important things with anything, whether it's business, fitness, or your relationships, anything. It's all about consistency. If you can't show up, you know, if you only show up every once in a while, you're never gonna see the results. It has to be like an every single day thing, something that you're always thinking about, something you're always working on. And it's the same way in business. So, you know, with you just starting this, like, I mean, if as long as you're consistent, I know you're going to be successful.
Yeah. And if you guys have any tips or tricks for me, by all means, throw them out there. I know you're both successful men, so.
We try. We're working on it. Yeah,
it's work in progress, aren't we?
It's work in progress.
Yeah, it's controlling what you can control. And like you said before, learning from failures and past mistakes. Everything that you've talked about relationship-wise can very easily be translated into running a business.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's a lot of the same things, controlling what you control, learning from mistakes, moving on, accepting where, or being open about where you're failing and how you can improve on that. Like that's literally entrepreneurship.
Yeah. That's so good.
Building a business and just like you said, consistency.
Yeah.
Just showing up every single day. And you know, one of our favorite books is Atomic Habits, you know,
I do love that.
Getting 1% better every day. It's, you know, constantly just continuing growing and we'll, you know.
Have you ever read The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? It's like my top five favorites.
That's a good one.
I've read it like three times. I should read it again. Actually, it's been a while.
We need a book of the month.
Let's, we do.
We should
we're slacking. Yeah, we'll do that one.
Yeah, we'll do that one.
That one's been around for...
I've read it for a few years, so yeah.
It's been a while.
It's so good, though.
Yeah, but we need to get back to that. Man,
I know, we've been really slacking on our book club.
You guys don't strike me as book club guys, but I love that.
Yeah, well, we did it for the whole first year of the podcast. We read... We read
books.
Yeah, we read 12 books, all of 24. We would do originally when we started the podcast, we were doing an episode with a guest every week, and then just an episode with just him and I. And then so we're like, okay, well, we kind of are the ones with
realize
him
people
I,
like guests more.
Yeah, yeah. So then we're like, all right, we're gonna start doing more guests. But one of the ones we would schedule every month is we would basically read a book together and then kind of do like a book review episode where we just talk about the book. And we did that all of 2024, and then we've been slacking a little bit.
The December book review didn't happen until like late January.
Yeah, because we had my wife, his ex-wife, we all read it. It was like a parenting book.
What was it?
Good Inside.
I've never heard of that.
No, it's awesome.
Really?
Yeah, check it out. It's very good.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Becky Kennedy is a really, really good book.
She's a great follow on social media, too.
Yeah, oh, nice. I don't know if you're an audiobook person, but the whole thing's on Spotify.
Yeah.
It was a really good one. So we had both of them in here and it was a fun episode.
Yeah, it actually wasn't the Zach and Pat show. It was the Gina and Melissa show that
day.
I love it. Have you guys read Man's Search for Meaning?
No.
No.
Ooh.
Is that a good one?
It'll knock your socks off. Okay. It's hard read, like an easy hard read, if that makes sense. Like I think it's something Frankel. I think it's his name. I'll have to look it up. I can't remember it. He was in a survivor of the Holocaust and he was a psychologist and he was forced to do experiments on the Jewish people as a Jew. And he talks about the psychology behind how just survival in general, but then in finding meaning in the path of your life after. It is profound. It is really hard to read.
Sure.
It's called Man What?
Man's Search for Meaning.
Search for.
But it will change you. It will change you. It is really powerful. Really powerful book. And I think every man should read it.
Just like, bought it.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, it's hard to put down, but also hard to keep turning the page because you're like, oh, this is so rough.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, anything to do with the Holocaust, and especially if someone was talking about the guys that were doing experiments and stuff, like just.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good though. Like it was weird because he was able to like be a part of something so horrific, but also be a psychologist and look at it from the outside of himself and the things that he had to do and to survive, you know, because the only way to even get like a piece of bread for the day was to do these horrible things. And it was the only way to stay alive. But it was like anyway. You'll see. It's so good. I can't wait for you to read it now.
Read it. Yeah,
for sure. It'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, because we need a book.
Yes.
So I'll buy that one too.
There's a lot of fake it till you make it in entrepreneurship. Why do you think authenticity is the real superpower?
Ooh, yeah. Okay, so fake it till you make it. Isn't that an interesting concept? Mm-hmm. I partially believe in it. In a way,
I do a little
There's
bit.
A give and take
for sure. I mean,
but
a little bit of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's like for me, it's not about faking it till you make it, but it's about believing that you can be that person. Does that make sense? Like, you're not really faking it if you know you can be that person, mm-hmm. You know, it's the belief you have in yourself. So, I do believe in it in the sense of like, you're never going to be exactly where you want to be or where you can be if you're not trying. So, if you at least have the vision of that person and you just not even pretend to be that person, but work towards being that person, you'll get there. What was the question?
Why do you think authenticity is the real superpower?
Because I think that's what the world needs. I think there are plenty of people out there pretending to be what they're not. And I don't think you can really make a true, powerful impact on anyone if you're not being true to who you actually are. I think the people that make the biggest impact in the world are those that are brave enough to actually be their human self, that are brave enough to show their weaknesses and their flaws and, you know, look at the world through the lens of I'm just like everybody else, but I'm going to still try to be better, you know?
Yeah. I think this kind of goes back and relates to a question that we just did a question and answer. That's one of the two solo podcasts that we do. So book club, question and answer. It's super fun. So we have
we put it up on Instagram and people ask us questions. And, you know, one of them was like, what gives you the right? Was the question that was asked of us. And, you know, the way we took it was like, what gives us the right to talk about the things that we're talking about? And it's one, because, you know, I feel like we're relatable, but two, authentic. Mm-hmm. We're willing to be open and honest about who we are. I mean, what is this, episode 120 something? No, you can't fake who you are for that many episodes. But mm-hmm. also kind of ties into, like, I mean, look at all the stuff that you're seeing coming out now on, so like on Netflix and Hulu, like Scamanda or the Apple Cider Vinegar. Have you guys heard about those? Mm-mm. So it's about two women that faked having cancer. And, oh, yeah. And grew and just scammed a bunch of people and all of this stuff. One's from Australia. So Apple Cider Vinegar, and then the Scamanda happened in California, Northern California. And, you know, it all came out eventually. You know, we have nothing to worry about. We're being authentic. We're not hiding right. shit. You know, you get what you get, and, you know, you like it or you're not, or you don't, mm-hmm. which we're going to be fine with. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy that the amount, like, insane that people like try and do that and not be authentic and not be themselves. I just think it comes off real.
Well, I mean, yeah. And I think that, I mean, that's why you're seeing the rise of these forms of independent media, and you're kind of seeing mainstream media kind of die right in front of us. You know, I mean, podcasts and all these online shows, that's what most people get their information from nowadays. Mm-hmm. If you look at viewership on, you know, any of the major news platforms, NBC, CNN, all these, they're down significantly mm-hmm. because of the lack of authenticity. Like, you don't
facts.
If you sit there and watch those people on the news, like they're clearly reading off a teleprompter. Mm-hmm. That's not what they really believe. That's what they're being fed, and that's what they're being told to tell everybody. And yeah. it's not truly those people, and you can feel it. Versus when you watch any, you know, major podcast or anyone, you know, any podcast, even ours, like you're getting who they really are.
Yeah,
and it's not fake. You can't, like Pat said, you can't do over 100 episodes of someone something and fake it the yeah. whole time. You know,
I agree.
You can fake something for maybe 20-30 minutes, but like after that, like, yeah. you're gonna run
eventually
out of
the
shit.
Mask slips. You yeah. know? And that goes with life, love, relationships, or authenticity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know what gives you the right? Well, you're human, and yeah. you're willing to learn, and you're willing to be honest, and you're willing to say, yeah, I screwed up, and you're willing to say I suck in this area. That's what gives you the right, because you're not trying to be a fake person. You're not trying to pretend to be something you're not. So, yeah.
Which kind of leads into, you know, for you, if we were to ask you that question, you know, what gives you the right to have the podcast and speak on what you're speaking about? Not as saying it in a mean way, but like what makes you feel like you're able to have that authority to speak on domestic violence and sexual assault and tell your story? What, why you?
Well, experience is a great teacher. Experience will teach you way more than a book ever will. You know, experience teaches you more than a teacher will. If you have lived through something and you've come out the other side, well, you have the right to speak about it. You have the right, you have the authority to give guidance in that area. If I hadn't been through that, then I wouldn't really have a right, you know, but I have. And if I hadn't healed from that, then I probably wouldn't really have a right, but I have, you know. And I don't think that I've ever spoken about it with the intention of teaching anyone anything. I've spoken about it from a place of, this is what I'm going through. This is where I'm struggling. I've cried. I've laughed. I've, you know, I've done all the things. And it was never with the intention of, I'm better than you and here's what you need to do with your life. It was with the intention of, this is where I feel alone, and this is what I'm learning in the process of being alone and learning about myself, and hopefully that will help someone else. So
it's awesome. And I wasn't trying to come across as like,
I know.
Yeah. So
I know.
More of like, I guess I could have asked it a better way. Like,
no, I knew what you meant. I knew what you meant. Like, I'll never be back, yeah. but it's fine.
Shit.
This guy just aired up my tire and now he's being a complete jerk. His mask is slipping.
Shit. I'm that asshole. That comes.
Oh, man.
But that's great. Well,
I know we got to get you out of here pretty soon. So,
Anything else you want to discuss or pitch before we let you go?
No, just I would just say to anyone listening, like, no matter what you're going through in your life right now, you don't have to stay there. You're not stuck there. Like, life changes all the time, but it changes more when we realize that we can change, when we pick up the pen and we start to write our own story. I love how Joe Rogan says that you have to be the hero of your own story, because it's the truth. Like, it really is. And you can be. anyone can be, and it doesn't matter how dark or awful it looks. You can literally change your entire life by just believing that you can and choosing to become who you know that you can be. And so I would just say, don't give up. Don't give in. Don't let the world tell you who to be. Look inside, become aware of who you are, look where you're at in your life, and decide what you want to change and be that change. And then the world around you will change. So
that's awesome. Well, you always surprise with one last question. All right. It's a fun game we like to play called called the Tombstone Game. Okay. Here lies Ashley. What does it say on your tombstone?
Ooh, I would say she chose to be a light.
Love it.
Perfect. Yeah,
it's perfect.
It's awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button yet, please do that for us. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.